I'm Julianne Good, and this is Psych 101. Welcome. We are here to make psychology more understandable with tips for you and your family to make your lives easier. How are you doing tonight? Yeah, that's the question for the evening. How are you really, truly doing? Tonight, my special guest is Jose Trujillo, and we are going to be talking about Hispanic mental health and all the different aspects that go along. So if you would like to participate in this conversation at any point, please give us a call, 800-893-9562. We would love to hear from you. And Jose, hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent.
Excellent. Well, I'm very happy and excited to join you here in this wonderful, wonderful studio. I mean, so as soon as I walked in, I felt like I was at home because it kind of looked like my home.
We'll have to talk about that later. So, Jose, can you give us a little bit about your background in psychology?
Sure. I started with my bachelor's of arts from Cal State in Los Angeles. And I moved on from there to UCI and I get a master's in psychology, master's of arts from UCI. And now I'm currently involved in business, DBA, doing a DBA, Doctor of Business Administration in RC University. So, yeah.
Yep. Good for you. That's a smart move. Psychology and business, it can't go wrong with that combination.
Absolutely not. They go together,
actually. Yes, definitely. So can you tell us a little bit about your background? It's very interesting. We've had discussions back and forth about your childhood and how you got into psychology, and I think it's really interesting.
Yes, and I came to this country when I was about 15 years old. I was monolingual in Spanish. So I started first year in high school, and it was a challenge because I had no background in the wonderful English language. So it took me aback. There was a lot of issues, changing, moving, acculturation, of course, the language factor, and also some of the issues from in the psychological point of view. Such as had behavior problems. It was a bad area too. So there were definitely, I wish I had known about psychology back then. Because then I would have at least would have been more self-reflective about my own actions.
And where did you move from at age 15?
I was born in Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico. It's about an hour from Puerto Vallarta, if you know that where that is. Mm-hmm. I came here when I was around 15, so I had my secondary education in Mexico, so I know how to write and read well in Spanish. And my mother was already here in the United States. We were at the time living with my grandparents, so. She came for us to the United States in 1990. Back in that. Yeah, it's way back. And then we tried to be a family again. So my mother, my sister, and myself. Yeah.
So can you talk about a little bit of how that was leaving your birthplace for a country that you didn't know what was going to happen here? And some of the challenges that you went through.
Sure.
Period.
I was surprised when I first came to the United States. Of course, I was 15 years old. I was full of hormones and craziness that happens during adolescence. Mm-hmm. So it was a time of high stress, leaving your friends, family behind. And then coming to a strange place. And curiously, when I started going to high school here, I found out that a lot of people were in my situation. Mm-hmm. a lot of the students who I contacted and spent time with, and especially in the first 2 years of high school, were in very similar situations as mine, often single-parent households, histories of abuse, violent situations, and then coming here and not knowing the language. I was surprised by the number of people that were in that type of situation.
So did that make the transition a little bit easier maybe then, because you felt like, okay, we've got something similar happening here, so we can support each other?
Right. That was probably the thing that most of the kids during that time or during that period of time have in common. They have each other as common. And it's not surprising that building that type of peer relationship with other people like the same things that you do, dress the same way that you do, find common things, it's not surprising that they stick together. And oftentimes they're in dangerous situations, you know, dangerous neighborhoods. So they go to the dark side. They go to the wrong side.
Yeah. Where did you move to over here? Did you move right into LA?
Well, I landed South Central. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my home when I first came in. So that was definitely a culture shock. Never in my life had I seen a African American or a black person before. Mm-hmm. So. Living in during that time, it was a time of high crime. Mm-hmm. Remember that the riot started right around Florence and Normandy. I lived about a block away.
Wow.
Yes. So I was in the middle of it.
So how long were you in South Central before the riots started happening?
1990.
Oh. You were right on the edge of it. Wow.
Yeah. And
nothing like a welcome to America, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And the riots occurred. If Sublime, you know, the group is correct, is April 1992.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's quite a shocking way to come in.
Yeah. But then again, you have that small support system in the people who are in a similar situation as you are. So you go and you try to make friends that way. And of course, it's some of the country, some of the culture. So it's an extra challenge for people like myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would imagine. Now, are you close to your family?
Traditionally, this is my opinion, of course, but traditionally, Mexican-American families have been really close, have a close-knit family ties between each other. They help each other out. I am very close. I used to be very, very close to my mother. Single-parent household, again, never really met my dad until about when I was 37. Believe it or not, first time that I ever saw my dad, or anyone from my father's side of the family. So that was really interesting to see.
Did you meet
experience?
I bet. Did you meet him here or down in Mexico?
Down in Mexico. He has a small business. He makes shoes and is also interested. I was surprised to find out as we talked more and more. He's really interested in philosophy, psychology, and in fact has a few books in Spanish of the same books that I have.
Really? Yeah. How fascinating.
Right.
Wow. I bet you that just kind of made you go, did you ever wonder how you ended up getting interested in psychology? Was it...
You know, I never wondered. I mean, I was really surprised when my dad and I, my father and I had the same interest. So that really, what he liked, didn't like, never crossed my mind, you know. So it was really surprising, and I want to find out, okay, how much genetics is playing on my own behavior without me even being aware that I'm doing it.
Yeah, you know? But I bet with having to go through such a major cultural change at 15, you would have had to get that natural awareness and watching people's behaviors and trying to figure out what are they going to do next, especially if there was like a language barrier. So is that when it really your interest in psychology and sociology and anthropology started kicking in?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think it was from very early on. In terms of time, I remember being 5, 6 years old and asking different questions about human behavior. Hey, where is this coming from? Or why is that person doing that? How come I don't have a dad and you do? Mm-hmm. You know, so it started from there, and it really increased that interest increased when I came here.
Did you ask why a lot?
I did.
Why?
Right. I did. And it's also a lot of self-reflection involved. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to find out, okay, is this something that it's innate in human beings, or is this something that is learned? Mm-hmm. And very early on, I started asking those two questions, and I haven't gotten an answer yet.
Still searching, right?
Still looking.
That's right. That scientist is always asking questions and searching. It's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you were going through your psychology bachelor's, did you know which direction you wanted to go?
Well, I know that I wanted to do something in social science. Because people and societies and history always have fascinated me. So I knew that there was, I was going to be a social scientist. I just didn't know what kind. And I decided for psychology the last possible minute that I could. It was the last class that I took as part of my decision to be in psychology or not. Psychology was the last class because I knew I was going to love it, and I did. And I never looked back, really.
That's great. Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? And it finally clicks in. You're looking, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then all of a sudden, just bam, it just kind of lands in your lap, and you're like, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to concentrate my energies and really push forward.
Oh, and absolutely. And once you find that out, then there's a lot of work involved, a lot of tireless nights of doing homework. But ultimately, you have that feeling that you are where you're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And you keep on going.
That's great.
So it feels right.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's a great feeling. Where would you like to go with doing Hispanic research and therapy, and or where have you been doing it? That's probably a better question, right? Where have you been? Where do you want to go?
Well, I have always expressed interest for bilingual individuals, not only bilingual but trilingual, multilingual, mm-hmm. and how they process information. And how that information, how they, those thoughts are transferred into behavior, how are they affecting the individual, being from two different cultures, having two different languages, two sets of data in their brains, you know, two sets of mental dictionaries where they can draw from, and how that affects their behavior. Not only in the cognitive process, meaning in terms of reaction times, how fast you process one language versus another, but how not only that cognitive process, but also how it reflects on the behavior of the person. Mm-hmm. You know? And is there a correlation between those two, the behavior itself. And the level of processing information. in different languages. In this case, I studied Spanish and English speakers, and also Chinese and English speakers too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Chinese. Is that a difficult language to...
Yeah,
learn?
Absolutely. But in terms of level of the processing, all languages behave the same. They really go up, bottom up, and then they get to that mental dictionary, and then they go up to the higher processes, or the higher cognitive processes of the brain, and then comes back again.
Right.
So the processing itself is the same, even though the languages are different. Yeah.
So do you find that you have two sets of dictionaries in your head also still?
Oh, absolutely. And when one fails, I draw from the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I can imagine that, you know, for some words, you just, mm-hmm. there's not an equivalent in another language. And you're kind of tongue-tied and going, okay, how do I explain what I'm thinking about? And excuse me for a minute, but I've got to figure the correct word here. I have several friends that are bilingual, Spanish English or German English, and they're just like, one of my friends said, my translator tubes are crossed and I can't figure out how to say this in English anymore. So, you know, so it's just a matter of patience.
Right, and it's especially true in the case of where a word has such a strong meaning in that language, and cannot be translated into your own. It holds its own, and that's one of the interesting things about balanced bilinguals, or people who are most of the time have the same level of proficiency in both languages. Sometimes they cannot translate stuff because it's unique to the language, unique to the culture.
Yes.
And we try to justify it and give it meaning by using different words often than just one word.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's really difficult.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it happens to me all the time.
I wish eventually they would just come up with a universal language. Maybe take a few words from one language, a few words from another language, just all mesh them up, and then eventually everybody's going to learn that language and everybody can finally talk to each other. That would be phenomenal. Maybe we should start that.
Yeah, call it the Babylon Project. How about that?
I love it. All right, the birth of a new language here.
All right, let's do it.
All right, so we are going to take a commercial break, and we will be right back with Psych 1-on-1.
Are you searching for answers and insight to life issues? Is the behavior of family or friends questionable or concerning? Find tips and possible solutions from the convenience of your own PC, cell phone, or tablet at therapycable.com. Therapy Cable has the most comprehensive library of contemporary therapy videos online. Help may be as easy as a few clicks away. Therapy Cable offers comprehensive therapy videos ranging from addiction to self-care and contact information for qualified providers. Find the answers to your life challenges at therapycable.com.
Hi, we're back with Psych 1-on-1. This is Julianne Good, and I've got Jose Trujillo with me. We are talking about Hispanic mental health this evening. Mm-hmm. And with your research, Jose, what's one of the more fascinating topics within Hispanic mental health that you came across?
Well, in my own research, it started very cognitive science-y-like. So we really wanted to hit on the scientific differences between bilinguals, monolinguals and bilinguals, and then move on from there to a more, to other extensions of the same sort of topic going into culture. So there is a difference between the cultures. We wanted to really start from a basic quantitative point and then go from there and see and evolve into culture and evolve into community and see if there was a relationship between the basic premise of comparing monolinguals and bilinguals, and then moving on to a larger context. So we started by just testing basic, for example, reaction times of bilinguals and monolinguals. And we found that bilinguals often lag in compared to monolinguals. So their reaction times are slower. Now, when we say that, we're not talking about 2 or 3 seconds below. We're talking about a fraction, a 1,000th fraction of a second.
You can barely notice it unless you're testing it out, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's what we did. We put people in the lab right in front of a screen, and we measured reaction times. And we did find there was a very, very small difference in terms of how monolinguals and bilinguals process information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the good news for bilinguals is that they had higher ratings of association,
mm-hmm.
meaning that they could draw from different parts. We're talking about these mental lexicons that people have. They could draw and make associations faster than monolinguals. So their association skills were off the roof, you know, their scores, but not in terms of the reaction times. And one explanation could be that bilinguals process information through a parallel process, and that two different languages are and at different times moving at the same speed.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you know anything about computers, if you've got two or three different programs running at the same time, it's going to slow down your computer.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same deal with bilinguals, especially if they're dealing with three languages or more.
Right, I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so taking it from the lab into the home, and households, Hispanic households that have several, maybe two or three generations living in them. The older generation is monolingual. And the younger generation may also be monolingual, but only in English. I've known people that have grown up in households like that. And I can only imagine the difficulty of trying to communicate within family members who only know one language each,
right?
Versus bilingual. I mean, is there any way of communicating within the family members in a household like that?
Yeah, and historically, this is not new. Second generation, they start to lose the language more, and then the third generation start even lose the grandparents' tongue, the grandparents' language. Also becomes almost extinct unless there's children are constantly being communicated with Spanish, English, or whatever other language you may speak at home. So what we found was there was a lack of communication between the first and the third generation.
Mm-hmm.
So There was communication, but it's most of the time what we found in parent Hispanic households was that the parents were speaking to the children in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Children were talking back or communicating to the parents in English.
Mm.
So if the great mediator could be the parents. So if the parents enforce Spanish in their households, then the third generation, what we're talking about, they'll grow up most of the time bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But if we if they don't enforce Spanish in their households, then they'll become more acculturated into society. And then language as part of acculturation, and they would not translate that to their kids.
Mm-hmm.
So communication is really important, but by the third or fourth generation, then communication sometimes is lost because parents cannot speak to their grandchildren anymore. Grandchildren cannot speak to their parents,
right,
or their grandparents, and so on.
Yeah, and translating over into behavioral issues. I mean, what would transpire out of that? I would imagine there would be a lot of just being, you know, being tense about it, being, you know, I don't know how to talk to you, and this is really important that we communicate. We're living in the same household.
Yeah.
So what kind of behavioral issues do you see in households like that?
Yeah, there are definitely behavioral issues in many of those households where this happens. Because the way that society transfers, we have rituals, we have things. For example, in my own, I have a cousin had a quinceañera, which is like 15 birthday party for girls. It's sort of a ritual of passage, mm-hmm, among girls. And that was really important. But I remember that when we went to the party, everything was English, you know, because that's what she wanted. And nothing about Hispanic culture or or anything related to the language, the language in Spanish, no music in Spanish. So everything was done by the teenage wishes, and everything was rap and in English. And
which I'm sure the parents and the grandparents were just thrilled about, right?
Oh, they were just absolutely thrilled. But, you know, it's a girl. Okay, let's do whatever she wants. Uh-huh. It's her day. So that's a prime example of how that translates into the acculturation process. In terms of behavior, well, then when this 15-year-old grows up, she's going to try and transfer the culture that she wants to her children. And so even within one or two generations, we lost that communication between old and young. And it's so important to have that link, that connection.
Yeah.
Because you just, sometimes people feel when they come here or when they're born here and they lose that language, that there's no point of reference sometimes. And there's issues of identity.
Mm-hmm.
Problems with identity, problems with depression, problems with different behavioral problems, especially in adolescence, because they need that connection to the past, and sometimes they lose it because of the language
and then
barrier.
They also lose the beauty of the customs and the closeness of the tight-knit family, because I would imagine families are closer in Mexico than they are here once they become acculturated to more American styles of individuality.
Absolutely. And of course, this is my opinion in my own experience, and I just happen to agree with that statement. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that can cause a lot of problems. I mean, not only in the home, but in schools and work, you know. I was reading the story of this one young man that was trying to make it in the American culture of, you know, I've got to go out and push it, and individuality, dog eat dog. I've got this mentality now of trying to make it in America. But then turning around, and then his grandmother was slighted because he wasn't coming over and visiting her anymore or as much. And she felt like she had loss of the family, loss of that deep connection that she used to feel.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. And that happens more often than we'd like to. But it's part of is part of becoming acculturated, I think, in this society.
Yeah, so when we come back from the music break, let's talk about different forms of acculturation within America, within the Hispanic culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
we'll do that.
We're going to take a little break. Welcome back to Psych 101. This is Julianne Good, and I'm with Jose Trujillo. We are talking about Hispanic mental health. And before the break, we were talking about situations with acculturation when Hispanic people move into the United States, and the good and the bad of it, and what a transition it is moving into this culture of individualization versus being more of a family-oriented culture. So, Jose, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. And especially if we were talking about marriage, for example, we had, after growing up in Mexico, a very specific idea of what marriage should be and what marriage is. I view it as the main source of where people go to feel loved and secure, to feel that they matter in that inner circle. Very important, in fact, and the place where I was born, there were a lot of people named Jose, Joseph, Maria, Mary, and Jesus, and that's Jesus. So we have the whole sacred family going on. Everyone had a first name, Jose, Maria, or Jesus, and then they had their real name, the middle name. So the family structure, the marriage, was sacred, I remember, and very strong, meaning that they develop a really strong support system. Now, when I came here, I was really surprised by the culture of individualism and doing what is best for you, and second is everybody else. Mm-hmm. Well, when I was young, about 20 or so, I decided to get married. Didn't go so well, especially with the ideas that have been embedded in me for such a long time. Of what a marriage should be? Well, it ended about 5 years later. It ended, and I remember sitting down on a sidewalk and just putting my hands over my head and asking myself, well, what happened? you know, and it was that I was perplexed by the divorce, and the idea that I had in my head was so different from the reality I was experiencing at the time. And I think this, of course, is an opinion, but I have talked to people who have been through similar situations, and they say the same thing. Oh, yeah, what happened? You know, I was fine one day, and then the next day, it was just hell broke loose, and we're divorced. One of the things that I have found to be sort of an overlapping theme is this idea of social networks. Mm-hmm. This thing that we didn't have before. You know? What do people do when they got angry at each other, even in Mexico or in older generations? Well, you talk to your mom, you talk to your dad, or you talk to anybody, a close friend, and then they, most of the time, they maybe would advise you to think about it and then go back to your spouse. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, you have a fight with someone, or you break up, and there's 10 other guys on the sidelines waiting for a text or for an update on your Facebook status that says single instead of in a relationship or whatever.
Right.
You know, so there are so many other variables involved now in marriage and having kids. And many of my acquaintances and friends have expressed, and many of them are Latino, especially Mexican-Americans, and they have expressed, you know, I'm done. I prefer to stay single. And of course, the grandmothers are just shouting at them, and because they want grandchildren, you know, they want to continue that tradition. And then, so they decide not, they're deciding more and more not to get married, not to have kids. And this is completely opposite to the idea that we had when we first came to this country. You know, I had to do a total 180 of your thinking and your acculturation, the different ideas that you grew up with, and then turning that on its head.
Right, and then questioning the whole process. It's like, okay, I'm not happy in this marriage, so what else is there? Especially since you were 25.
Absolutely.
I know when I got divorced, I was, you know, early 30s, and I was kind of like, okay, now what? Because I think it's the whole thing, too, and the younger generations now, it's like, okay, I want to do this. My family would be happy if I went and got married and, you know, and built that family, built that lineage. And sometimes that's just not a reality. And the whole thing is, too, it's faster-paced living up here. And the traditions just don't hold anymore. It's like, what are traditions anymore? I mean, right. It's interesting to see the 20-somethings that their parents and grandparents may have passed on something to them, but it's not as significant of history. It's kind of like, oh, well, that's interesting. We'll just pass that on. You know, it's not quite words of wisdom yet.
Right. But we
so
still
everything's kind of being put into question now.
Right. Well, people are still getting married.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because of the hope, because of seeing their grandparents be together after 50 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They want that. People want that. Especially if you grew up in a culture where that is so important. But then again, sometimes they are up to a very rude awakening when that doesn't happen, because we live in a very different society that with their parents, you know. Very fast paced, often a mother and father work, so who takes care of the children?
Right.
You know, so very, very different culture. I mean, remember in Mexico, my grandfather always come after work, and my grandmother had 8 kids, and she stayed at home mm-hmm. raising them. Well, now who raises our kids? You know, it's
babysitters during the day. Oh yeah, at least $75 a week. Yeah, and the schools. And then, you know, there you go. It's, you know, the whole situation, too, with the schools. You know, the acculturation, again, it's depending on the school district that your child is in. Yes. If your child goes in only speaking Spanish, really difficult. I mean, how did you learn English? How did you come in and just deal with the school system? I would find that fascinating.
I learned English the same way that my friends learned English, by not talking to each other and just turning on the TV. Mm-hmm. I learned English literally from the TV, TV shows and music videos and things that I was into and I wanted to learn. So I learned the lyrics, for example, of song.
So a lot of swear words up front, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, interestingly, the first song that I ever learned in English was a song by Foreigner. Yeah? Mm-hmm. I want to know what love is.
Oh, well, that's a good song. That's a nice song to start learning English to, at least.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
That's positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I had very fantastic teachers in high school, although I was depressed and mad because I was in another country that I knew I didn't want to go to. I was 15. But I had really amazing teachers who taught me grammar very well, who went to trips to different places and learned things real by touching them, by going into the zoo and saying, this is a bear, you know? Mm-hmm. So I actually seeing the thing. I'm really thankful for the teachers in high school. Although I learned English by their teachings. And if I ask my friends, the other day I asked my friend, okay, how do we learn English? And he said, I have no idea, because we never spoke English with each other. Whenever we were as, people who came from the same place, mm-hmm. or whatever, we always spoke Spanish, never a word of English. Mm-hmm. And just amazes me that we learned so much. And that tells you about the plasticity of the brain.
Mm-hmm. Right. And your tenacity too, to want to learn, you know, and be bilingual, you know, and you do a phenomenal job. I love talking to you. When you told me your story initially at school, I was going, wow, this is awesome. You're an American success story from the traditional sense of when people were, that's the way that this country was started, with immigrants.
I really absolutely love this country and the opportunities that it's given to me. Yeah. Absolutely. Love it. I love it. I don't know. I'm really thinking about it. I just don't know what other country would be best for me. I just can't imagine myself being somewhere else. You know, I've been here 20 years now.
Well, yeah. Go check out Europe sometime, too.
Hey.
We're talking about
Freud
before, right?
University, Vienna. Let's go. Let's party.
Hint.
Paint. Yeah, that's right. Let's paint the town with psychology.
Yeah, there you go. From one end of the globe to the other.
That's right.
You're ready. Yeah. So as we're starting to wrap up, mm-hmm. some of the psychological issues about doing counseling with Hispanics. What do you think is really important when dealing with family issues?
Well, from speaking to a lot of my friends who have become social scientists and some of them counselors, that when dealing, especially with immigrants, don't go directly to the point. Don't go directly into the business side of counseling. Don't ask any direct questions. You gotta make people comfortable. Mm-hmm. Ask about different things, hobbies, things like that, to get people comfortable. And then once they open up, they open up. Mm-hmm. They open up, and maybe you won't be able to really shut them up after a while.
And how about when dealing with a family, addressing the father or the husband first? How important is that?
Well, it varies from household to household. It varies from what type of culture this person is from. They varies from what town, varies from what city. So it is to the best interest of the counselor to find out first before seeing the client where exactly the client is from. Mm. Most of the time in Mexico, it is still a patriarchal society. However, the real power that in Mexican society, I think, are women, because they maintain the household. They take care of everything when the parent, the father is out working. Mm-hmm. See, so there's a I would say a devotion for the mother figure, mm-hmm. you know, and there's also a sort of a respect for the father figure. So they deal, people often deal with their mom and dad in very different ways in Mexico. And so that's important information to have if you're a counselor. Mm-hmm. If you are treating an individual or a family or children of that kind of family, you know, you definitely want to do your background check before mm-hmm. Before starting that session.
Right. Yeah. And then ask the questions and come across as being warm and caring.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The one thing that I found counselors have told me is that once the client is at ease with you, once that they see that you're generous and honest, they're very, very loyal. Mm-hmm. So they stay with you sometimes for a lifetime.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And you're part of the family too, and sort of a way, because, you know, I have very close friends who are Hispanic, and every time I go over there, it's like, you know, their house is my house, and, yeah. And it's like, come on in,
it's like
join
we,
us.
Very,
That's
I think,
beautiful.
Like overall, very, very welcoming. But then again, it's part of it. It's part of keeping people in the circle, mm-hmm. you know. And of course, in the culture books, I've read very different stories about the differences or similarities between Latino and Hispanic and Central American and Mexican American. All these different definitions that books have, mm-hmm. And how they're overlap sometimes, but often they don't agree with each other. So ultimately, it's very important to tell the client or to ask the client, how do you want to be referred as? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of Mexican Americans that I know don't want to be called Hispanics. Mm-hmm. No, it's a very general term, and it pertains to people from Spain. Other people prefer Latinos, but then again, Brazil isn't Latin America and they don't speak Spanish. So
I know it's so many variations, and yeah. I know we all. And I'm sorry, I just kind of had to put the umbrella at, you know, just using the term Hispanics.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's difficult, but there are, you know, many variations, yeah. and beautiful and similarities and differences, and that makes us just. It, you know, again, as being social scientists, that just locks us into, we're fascinated by behavior. No matter what culture you're from, it's beautiful. It's always something to discover about whoever's in front of you. You know, it's a new package. It's a new present. So it's beautiful.
And that present is ever-changing.
It is.
Yeah. So it you don't is. Have to, you know. Give it back to Macy's or whatever. You keep that gift, and it's a gift that keeps on giving.
Yes, it is.
It changes every time. You look at human behavior today, look at human behavior tomorrow, you will never get bored.
Exactly. Exactly. So keep your eyes open, keep your mind open, and ask questions and get to know the person in front of you. You know, they have something to enrich your life and vice versa. So, you know, just be open to the experience. So, Jose, if anybody wants to contact you, how can they do so?
Well, my email address, can I give my
Oh, yeah, of course, address? Definitely.
My email address is from the university. I'm going to use the university email address, if that's okay.
Sure.
This is JC, my last name, Trujillo. It's JCTRUJILLO at argc.edu.
And he's the librarian over at the Orange County campus.
That's
right. We enjoy you being there. You're very knowledgeable about whatever's going on in the library and trying to find information. And
yeah, absolutely. My title is Learner Support Specialist, and I absolutely love that title. I really didn't like it at first, so librarian will be best, but as I grew into the role, I really think that that's what I do. I support students the best that I can in various topics, not only in research and APA and how to write psychology papers, but also in terms of helping them with mathematics and helping them with technology. So my job is very versatile, and I absolutely love it.
And you're very good at it, and you're a man that wears many, many hats, which we appreciate. And you never get bored, right?
Never.
Who wants to be bored?
absolutely.
So is there any words of wisdom you'd like to part with?
Well, I don't know. I'm nobody. It's like the more, it's like Socrates said, the more I know, the less I think I know, or something like that. It's meaning that there's always something to learn from somebody.
Right.
You know, don't close your eyes. Open your eyes to the possibility of human connection. You know, sometimes I know we're busy, but sometimes it's just good to stop and actually focus on something.
Yeah.
So today, I walked as I was walking to the studio. There's a lot of things going on downtown, as you saw.
Yes.
Many sirens going. People walking up and down. I decided to, as I was walking to the studio, to focus on a tree. So I was walking by the side, and I was just focusing on that tree. And that really made a difference for me. It refocused my day. It made me feel calm, made me feel relaxed, made me look at the details of the environment. And sometimes we lose that. We lose that as we run from one place to another.
I agree. Thank you so much, Jose. You were wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, listeners, so much for tuning in to Psych One-on-One. I'm on every Monday night between 7 and 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Also archived on iTunes under the podcast section at skidrowstudios.com and at therapycable.com. So check out the other programs that I've done before, and there's a lot of self-help programs that you can tune into anytime. If you want to contact me, my business number is 562-234-4650, and my email is jgoode8@verizon.net. Thank you so much for tuning in again to Psych One-on-One. This is Julianne Good. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Bye now.